Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold on, let me take a drink of air. It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century. From I Love Lucy the News Radio, I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a reporter producer for Decider.com. And we are now in part 5 of the quarantine era of this podcast, which means no music, no audio clips, no fucks given, no do-overs. I bungled that beginning, and I'm not going to redo it because we're just going to get out episodes as fast as possible. This week, I am joined by quarantined together across multiple apartments in Los Angeles, Curtis Rutherford and Courtney Rose Halliard. Hello, Curtis and Courtney.
Hello.
Cross-country Skype session. I bet you're doing a lot of these now.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like this is the new normal. It's just like, oh, everybody exists in the same bedroom, Skyping each other.
Yeah, I've been doing it a lot previously just with my parents since moving across country. Ugh. But now it's like weird that you're Skyping your neighbor.
Yeah. Yeah, this is weird. We're getting to see what everyone's like home setups look like. I see Curtis has his self-portrait that was not done by him.
No.
You did not paint yourself, because that would be a whole other thing.
Yes. But I do have it up on my wall. This is up in the living room because I decided like it's too weird to have a painting of myself up in my bedroom.
I remember at, I think it was Guests of the Pod, Jeremy and Diana. They just talked about Mary Tyler Moore episode last week at their wedding reception, like their like wedding party at their apartment. We talked about where in your house you could put this painting.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, what room does this make sense where it isn't like super weirdly vain?
Yep. And I decided the living room, that way guests can really see it and enjoy. So,
I mean, the bedroom is weirder.
Mm-hmm.
I think the bedroom is weirder.
Yeah, I agree.
Bathroom is funniest.
Yes. Which actually, I do have a picture of Jeremy up in my bathroom because he was in my web series, and the poster for my web series I have up in my bathroom. So it's a drawing of Jeremy.
See?
Full circle.
Well, this week we'll not be traveling to a bathroom. Instead, we'll be traveling to February 6, 1963. Lawrence of Arabia ruled the box office. Hey Paula by Paul and Paula topped the charts. And CBS... CBS aired the Dick Van Dyke Show episode, It May Look Like a Walnut. Curtis and Courtney, you must have seen It May Look Like a Walnut before today.
Yes, I have, for sure.
I don't know if I had or not. I've seen so many Dick Van Dyke episodes, but we were looking for like what you would find like the Carl Reiner's favorite episodes list.
Yeah.
And I realized like I don't remember this at all. And watching it now, I say, like I don't know if I've seen it or if I did see it, I blocked it entirely.
Well, this is this is the most iconic episode, I would say, in terms of just like if you're gonna do a like montage of Dick Van Dyke moments, Mary coming out of the closet on Walnuts is like all over it.
Yeah.
But what was y'all's history with Dick Van Dyke Show? Did y'all grow up watching it on Nick at Night religiously as I did?
Yes. I was telling him I used to watch. I grew up on like all of basically my parents' shows because it was that. And then when they made TV Land into a channel, they used to just play everything nonstop. And it was just like, ugh, heaven, just heaven.
Yeah. And I've like retreated back into just watching nothing but old sitcoms because of the world we live in. And I'm like, you know what? February 6th, 1963 feels a lot better than April 20th, 2020 that we're watching this now.
Yep.
Oh, God. So like, wait, so Curtis, if you did not remember seeing this episode, are there other episodes of Dick Van Dyke Show that have stuck with you more that like before you had been like, that was the best episode or like, I loved that one?
I don't know if I could have like
picked one out of a lineup.
Yeah, I feel like they all melded into like one kind of like whatever the archetypal Dick Van Dyke episode is. It's like, oh, he's at the office.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Laura does this and then blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I don't think I could have picked out like any particular. And I think because I also was like watching it on Nick at Night and it was like F Troop, Get Smart, Dick Van Dyke in a row. And we would just watch that always.
Such a good, so good, such good television. Although now thinking back, F Troop definitely probably doesn't age well.
I was trying to think about that. I mean, Get Smart, one of the main jokes was like, oh, it's not the crawl, the crawl. Like, it's this like, oh, he's the Chinese.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know with F Troop because, I don't know. That's, I'm sure that
I
is.
I need to do.
Have someone, have a first person on to talk about that. Because in F Troop, it's like, it's a troop in like the Old West. It's basically Western Hogan's Heroes.
Yeah. It's like set in like the 1870s or like 1880s. It's like, you know, Old West. So I think there's a lot of like Italian actors playing Native American people, like that whole gig from the 60s kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeesh. So yeah, I should do F Troop. So there's some good.
At least from what I remember, it wasn't like, and again, this could be totally wrong, but it wasn't like, oh, look at these dumb Native Americans. It was.
I think they were the smarter ones, actually.
Yes.
But their play, like them being the smarter ones, is a joke. So therefore, like, it seems like a good thing. But then you realize, oh, they're making them smart because it's so preposterous that they would be smart. Like, so it's like, oh, the layers. Oh, the layers. But anyway, this week we're going to be talking about this week on Must Have Seen TV. We'll be talking about the Dick Van Dyke Show episode, It May Look Like a Walnut. It is the 20th episode of season 2. It was written by Carl Reiner and directed by Jerry Paris. And here is how Hulu describes the episode. Under the influence of science fiction, Rob fears that a walnut will steal his imagination and his thumbs. Danny Thomas guest stars. Curtis and Courtney, how accurate is that description?
I mean, not really. It's not the walnut that he's afraid of.
Also, under the influence of science fiction makes it seem like it's that old, like, he was under the influence of comic books. Yeah, like the,
very like the House of Un-American Intelligence. Wait, what was it? HUAC or whatever? Like the HUAC for sci-fi?
Mm-hmm.
What is House Un-American Committee?
Activities Committee?
Okay, yeah.
I think HUAC, yeah.
Yeah, I've listened to so much You Must Remember This about the Red Scare and stuff, so that's like in my brain. So yeah, the episode opens like they all do with the opening credits, which is such a great opening credits sequence, and he trips over the ottoman, which as a kid, I always wanted to see him trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do.
Yeah. I got annoyed when it was one where he would like skirt aside it. And they switch them up too.
Yeah.
So like I think some seasons are all trip and then some seasons are all avert it and then some they mix it up. And then there's yet another version in the 90s Nick at Night would do these things where they would add lyrics to the theme songs. So as ads. And so and there's yet another version. He clears the ottoman, but then accidentally stumbles over the rug. After that, Rob and Sally and Buddy shake hands. Then the episode title comes on, obscuring Richie. it's so good. And also to note, this is the very first episode that has the episode title like on the intro.
Oh.
Yeah. It says clearly, It May Look Like a Walnut, which part of me wonders if they did that because they just wanted everyone to know, like, this one's going to be a weird one. We're just going to tell you the title up top. Just brace yourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, because it really is very, Yeah, there's the through line of it is kind of really bizarre.
Yeah.
It's not, there's not much grounding.
Oh, no. I was noticing, like, it's shocking this is season two, because this seems like a season five idea.
Yeah.
Like, you know what, we've done the format so much, we're going to do a fantasy episode.
Because most of the episode is Rob's dream, right? Or his nightmare. And because of that, from like a sitcom perspective, you have to know the characters well. So when they pervert it, it becomes a joke.
Yeah.
Which one of my favorite jokes in this is when Buddy and Mel leave arm in arm.
Yeah.
Right. And you're like, oh, okay, we know that they're enemies. So therefore we know that's a nightmare because of it. But yeah, it's weird to do that in season two where they've established the tropes and the things that they could then pervert.
Well, I wonder if it's because, I mean, the first season is what, 24
episodes?
Like
30 episodes.
Which is like pretty long, especially for that time. Like, that's like you're really spending time with. So they probably were like, well, season two.
Jeez Louise. 20th episode. Yeah. I think this is episode 50 of the show overall, which in modern terms for a network show, that's season three. In modern terms for a Netflix show, that is like you're already canceled off Netflix. Like you get out of here. So the first act is Rob and Laura in their separate beds in their bedroom, and it is late at night, and just like in true sitcom fashion, they're trying to sleep with the lights fully on. Now, granted, Rob is watching TV, but Laura is ostensibly trying to sleep, I guess, or she's like gone under the covers. But like it is full light.
And also, they have this giant TV directly between their beds, like up on full blast.
Yeah.
The whole opening, it really felt like, well, Rob is just torturing Lori. Like, it's.
Well, I mean, they make it clear to the point that he's smothering her with a pillow.
Yeah, the theremin music is making her scared. And so he, like, grabs a pillow to, like, okay, I'll just, like, hold on. I'll just, like, muffle this a little bit. And he gets so invested, he doesn't notice her, like, squirming, which itself is kind of a Twilight Zone-y thing. Like, that's also a Hitchcock kind of right up top. Their banter throughout this opening arc is just, it is so weird they put them in separate beds because they are obviously getting it with each other. Like,
but they're a good married couple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the opening part, you could have replaced Mary Tyler Moore with Richie, and this scene would have, I think, worked better. Because it's like he's torturing her like she's a child. Of like, you're scared of the walnut people. Like, he's the walnut people, and Danny Thomas comes out, and her reactions are so like, Rob, I'm scared.
I think it's also like the writers definitely knew, like, Mary Tyler Moore plays anxious panic really well, which is why her turn, we'll get to it, like her turn towards being a Twiloian is so god, she's so good. So like this is, I also noted, this is just a shit ton of exposition because they're essentially setting up all of the games they're going to play throughout the rest of the episode, but you don't really realize that because the banter between the two of them is so fun. And their relationship is just so playful. It's like a torture play, but, you know, I'm not going to kink shame Rob and Laura. But, like, they set up, like, there's, like, a particle of Absorbitron is in the walnut from planet Twilo. The Kolak is the emissary. He was played by Danny Thomas with an English accent. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The peeking of the eye through the hair.
You lose your thumbs, you lose imagination. Like, literally, all of this is established in 5 minutes, maybe?
Which also, the part that, I mean, this was all confusing, but from the, like, sci-fi of what it was, it seemed like the way I remembered it was they said, Earthlings, you lose their thumbs so that we're helpless.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but then the way in Rob's nightmare, everybody loses their thumbs because that's what Twilolites do.
Well, so I think that in his Dream, but see, also Danny Thomas is Kolak, and he also is doing the no thumbs thing. So he, in exactly. theory, he should have his thumb.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you can just blame it on Rob's dream, Rob's faulty memory, that, right?
There is. I was looking at the IMDb goofs, and several of the incorrectly regarded as goofs listings, they go out of their way to go, although it looks like you can see Rob's thumb when he's trying to hide his thumbs. Maybe he's just dreaming that he's hiding his thumbs, and therefore it's a nightmare.
Or maybe it's an actor that is doing this in-camera trick.
Yes.
Wait a second. Are you telling me when my grandpa took his thumb apart,
no,
there wasn't him taking his thumb apart?
No, that was... They were a Twilowite. That's what they call them.
Yeah, because later on, he's the only human left. He's the last human.
The last one on Earth, which is such a Twilight Zone thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finally they go to sleep. Laura, sets her alarm for an hour because she's like, well, when they come to kill me in my dream, I want this alarm to wake me up and save me. So thanks, asshole. Laura did really call him an asshole? That'd be... funny. So we wake up in the morning and Rob gets out of bed and he walks, and then there are immediately wallets kind of littered across the living room floor.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. How well versed in Twilight Zone are y'all?
I'm very well versed.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I'm not, I've seen a couple episodes, but I'm not seeing a lot of them, but this feels very like the slow build towards full-on mania. It's like so well done and cool, and so just having a couple scattered across is really nice.
Yeah, the other Twilight Zone trope that they use in this kind of in this first part is the everybody's but crazy but me, what's happening, that, like, everybody's eating walnuts, nobody ate walnuts before, but then everybody else being very like, nope, this is reality, we all eat walnuts.
It's like everyone with sourdough starter kits or whatever. We've always been baking bread, what are you talking about? No.
Yeah.
But so I love this line when he goes in and he's like, Laura, did you see what's out in the living room? And she goes, a dead horse. So there's a lot of really fun to be had with the fact they establish that Twilowites do not have imagination, and so therefore, don't have a sense of humor. And so there's a lot of, all the characters are saying jokes, but since they're Twilowites, they're actually being deadpan, but the deadpan delivery of what their imaginationless brains have come up with is funny. It's like layers of... It's really cool. So her saying a dead horse is a great joke. It's funny. You would believe that Laura was sarcastically saying that, but then also you'd believe, Twilowite would just say that. It's layers, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is when, so she's handing out breakfast stuff and Richie comes down and he's like, I'm still full from the hot bowl of walnuts you gave me. And he gets a bag of walnuts. I love, so we don't see much of Richie, but can we just talk about how great Richie is as a character?
Yeah.
He's just such a dumb.
Yeah.
He just shakes that bag and just oh boy, he has the energy of a kid who was just told his lines and he just repeated them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And his main acting note is always, what if you say it faster and louder?
Yeah. he is always my go-to example of a cute sitcom kid done well, because he's intentionally stupid. They don't build a lot of plots around him, and they'll just say he's hiding in a cupboard somewhere sometimes.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So then she starts out, Laura starts cracking walnuts into their eggs. There's just walnut mania. Can we talk about the politics of breakfast? Because I feel like this comes up a lot in old sitcoms where if the wife is not going to cook breakfast, the husband's like, I can't eat.
Yeah.
This happens all the time.
Fine. You won't make me breakfast. I will leave without breakfast. You can't even take a piece of bread.
Yeah.
You don't know how to work the toaster.
Cereal?
Yeah.
For cereal.
It is so weird. This happens on Isle of Lucy a bunch too. I just watched one. I'm watching a lot of I Love Lucy right now, and a lot of it is, they just had a baby, and instead of Ricky actually pitching it, Lucy is, falling asleep over the cradle because she's, up too much and is like, and instead of Ricky just helping, he's like, I need to hire her a maid. And it's like, yeah. No, bitch, like, you need to help.
Oh, no, no. He has to go play at the nightclub.
Yeah, he's got to go rake in the dough. It's literally his excuse. Yeah, the politics of breakfast are just wild. So she puts a walnut in his pocket. At this point, like, first-time viewers in 1963, do you think they're glomming on to, like, this being a dream? Like, is anything about Mary Tyler Moore's performance tipping you off at this point?
No, I wouldn't. I would say no. Like, I feel like it is a good payback. Like, I think it's, like, especially, I feel like the two of them are very kind of competitive with each other and jokey and, yeah, they can fool around. So I think she was so scared the night before. And
yeah, he,
like, really, I mean, if you were just, like, sitting there and couldn't go to sleep and you were terrified the whole night, like, making him seem like, oh, okay, like, this is, yeah, this you is sort of like payback.
You would have a lot of time. Like, if Laura could not sleep, she has 6 to 8 hours to plan all this stuff.
Yeah.
She's like,
also, I mean, she did probably have to get up early to go and get all of these walnuts.
Yeah.
But the trope of the, like, a dream episode, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm thinking of, like, the sitcom tropes that we're now used to seeing of the Rashomon style episode.
Yeah.
Like, all these things that have now, we've seen so many times, definitely have not happened, or I'm guessing have not happened before this episode, not, right?
Yeah, like, no, like, and also, like, Dick Van Dyke's show was so revolutionary just in the way that it portrayed three-dimensional nuanced, like, just people, like, that live and have, like, points of view and shit. So, like, I could see it also being the first time that there was, like, an elaborate dream. Although I haven't watched a lot of, like, Father Knows Best or Make Room for Daddy, Danny Thomas show, so who knows?
Make Room for Daddy.
Yeah. God. So then we get the work scene. So he goes to work. Like, what did I write down? Oh, what? He's a house full of walnuts. What is the... He goes in, both Buddy and Sally say at the same time, a house full of walnuts, like...
Yeah. Which, here, they are kind of still, like, they are comedians. They're
yeah.
still, like, delivering jokes. They're doing that part. Which, by the way, the big thing that I do remember very well from Dick Van Dyke's show was, like, the fact that he was a comedian who had this, like, great middle class job of being a comedy writer.
Yeah.
Which obviously now does not exist in that way at all.
Nope. Nope. Now he'd be with Buddy and Sally for 13 weeks or less, and then maybe he'll see them again. He'll see one of them again, and then they're like, God, oh.
Exactly.
I wrote down, like, this is such a good example of actually funny characters that are professionally funny on a show, but they're also actually funny and they also make each other laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I get that on Friends, like, Chandler is funny for a while, but, like, if you were his friend, you would eventually be like, oh my God, like, shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, it makes sense as we as an audience laugh at him, but not, you know. And also, like, yeah. on Seinfeld, when Jerry does... When he is trying out material on, like, Elaine and George and Kramer and stuff.
They have to shut him down. It's like, is this a bit?
Yeah.
Don't, like, do this.
This yeah. is, you're not funny. This is stupid.
Dr. Katz was one of the first shows I remember that kind of going back to that. Where
yeah.
it's like, oh, these characters are reacting to the jokes as if they're jokes.
Yeah. And so that's so cool when he comes in and he's like, yeah, this guy came in from a house full of walnuts. And both of them look at each other like, a house full of walnuts? Like... They don't they even say, like, do you want to say it on, like, three or whatever? Like, it's so cool. And then when he starts going into, like, the whole Kolak spiel, Rosemarie, Sally is like, oh, yeah, I was at the UN the day Kolak was kicked out. Like, you know.
Yeah.
And the audience laughs because from Sally, it is a joke. Like, it's a really funny joke. But then when you realize, like, retroactively, no, she's a Twilowite. It's the other thing of, like, all the actors are playing. The comedy plays on these two levels.
Yeah. Well, because they're banter is still the same sort of at the beginning. I feel like they're, it's still very, again, I feel like all the characters there is like this, which I think is fine because it makes it feel more realistic. It's like they easily joke with each other and make fun of each other and like play. And yeah, so at the beginning, it doesn't feel like anything new, like him bringing up something and then kind of being like, well, duh, like I was there, of course. Like,
just doing a lot of riffing on each other.
So,
like, and even when like Buddy is opening up a walnut, they're like, you're eating walnuts? He's like, yeah, I switched from pistachios.
And
this is when he finds, like, there's a walnut in his typewriter. In his desk is an 8x10 of Danny Thomas, which, like, how familiar were y'all with Danny Thomas before this episode?
I was a big Jack Benny fan, and he would also show up as, like, in the same way that it would just be like, uh-oh, is this so-and-so? You know, they would always have their guest star of the week, so he would show up randomly on, I think, on the Jack Benny program. Also as Danny Thomas.
Which, from now on, whenever I enter someplace, I will only go, guess who I am?
Yeah.
Yes.
That was so,
guess who I am?
What is a Danny Thomas? It's so...
Danny Thomas.
Also, in his office, the other thing... I haven't seen it for a while, but there's this, like, little, like, 8x10 award right behind his typewriter, which apparently is different from what he normally has. It's like... Joe's award for best late night comedy or something. In everything else, it's like just this sheet music. So it's very innocuous, but in this episode only, it's this very, like, you can clearly read it.
That is, yeah, it was like Jimmy the First or something was like the name of the episode. There was a joke about a nearsighted turtle falling in love with a helmet that Buddy says. There's a lot of, like, non sequitur, like, lines that these, I don't know, these Twilowites kind of have a good sense of humor.
It's also very much of the, like, vaudeville Marx Brothers style, like, they're ready with that joke. They know the, like, oh, we're going to say it at the same time. Like, vaudeville.
I look up to Maury Amsterdam, so, like, I wish I could have that career. I realized... I always fancied myself that I was the Buddy Sorrell of my office. but then I did realize recently that I think I'm actually the Bill McNeil. But I'm not a sociopath, and so therefore it's really uncomfortable. But I don't know. It's not a good thing to be. But whatever. I'm a mix of both. I realized that they probably put that Danny Thomas 8x10 in his drawer, both to set up the fact that, like, Danny Thomas is hosting this show this week. Did Laura put you up to that? But also, kind of as a weird time capsule reminder 50 years later, this is what Danny Thomas looks like.
Yeah.
So that when he walks in here, that's who you're going to see. And now, obviously, in 1963, they don't need to do that, but it is... cool thing that they did. I don't know. And then Mel comes in, and he's the one that confirms that, you know, that that Danny Thomas is the host. Like, Rob's like, did Laura put you up to this? Which is a hilarious notion that Laura could call Alan Brady and be like, you need to have Danny Thomas be the guy. Oh, I guess maybe he's assuming that Laura called Mel to be like, can you lie about Danny Thomas? Yeah. That makes more sense than Rob assuming that Laura has executive producer pull or something. But then Mel's response is, no, she wanted Kolak.
So this is where it all starts to, like, become... This is where Dick is much more like, or you know, Rob is much more like, oh, this is a nightmare. Is it a nightmare? This is a nightmare.
Yeah. This is the Twilight Zone, like, turn. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, now he realizes he has gone sane in a crazy world.
Which he also points out. He's like, what is this, the Twilight Zone?
Yes, he does. He actually does say, like, Twilight Zone, which is so... Yeah. So, like, Rob starts freaking out. This is when we have an act break. Rob starts freaking out. He reaches into his lapel pocket, and he pulls out the walnut that Laura put in there, and he cracks it, and it has the glowing particle of absorbitron. Absorbitron. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absorbitron.
Absorbitron.
Yeah.
The
I can't do that thing.
Yeah.
Part of me also wonders, like, did Dick Van Dyke just make that noise on set a bunch and Carl Reiner was like, I'm going to write an episode around that.
Yeah.
That UFO noise he does. He calls home because,
connecting it back to the, like, Twilight Zone connection, the title at the beginning is also, a fair number of shows would do that, but Twilight Zone especially would alert the audience to, you know, whatever.
I wonder if they
Welcome
did that.
Welcome to the Dollhouse.
Yeah, I wonder if they, like, did that because of the Twilight Zone pastiche, and they were like, let's just keep that, because Dick Van Dyke Show did have really funny titles that clued you in on shit. That's interesting. He calls home to be like, I'm either, like, awake and, like, in hell, it is a nightmare and I'm dreaming, or Laura is playing a prank on me or whatever. So he calls Laura to be like, hey, can you go into the bed and then, like, wake me up?
Yeah.
But then, while he's doing that, right, like, that's when, or no, like, Laura just, like, hangs up on him, essentially,
right? She said she doesn't have time because she's making walnut bread.
Yeah, she's like, no, screw this. That's when Danny Thomas walks in, a very British Danny Thomas. Like, he's wearing, like, he looks like he's out of the Avengers, the 60s yes. show. Was that around in 63? No, that was a little bit later.
I think a little bit later.
Yeah. But he has, like, a derby on, like, a gorgeous suit. Like, I mean, I love the look, head to toe. He walks in, and then Rob asks, like, you're Danny Thomas, and then the response of, what is a Danny Thomas? Like, he has kind of like a Mrs. Doubtfire voice, I guess, maybe?
Yeah.
By the way, I was wrong. The Avengers premiered in 1961, so he may very well have been Dr. David Keel.
Yeah, I guess it was on for a long time.
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought it was only on for like a couple years. I always pair it with Batman 66 in my head.
Yeah, it went 61 to 69, so.
Wow. And had 32 episodes. I'm like, how the British do shit. This is when, like, Danny Thomas turns around and he spots the stain. And then Rob is like, how did you see that? And we get the joke of, I have perfect 20/20/20/20 vision.
Sure.
Very good. And then Rob says he's in the Twilo Zone.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which Twilight Zone was in season 4 at this point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was entrenched.
So this gets to something I wanted to ask you about this, because thinking of this as a pastiche of the Twilight Zone, right? Like, I feel like this only, for me, it only kind of works if you're looking at it as like, oh, they're doing the Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
I thought it was strange that they didn't have a Rod Serling character, that there's so many aspects of that pastiche that they didn't use.
I wonder if this is like baby's first pastiche in a way. Like the more that television goes on, every time a show does a pastiche episode, like, it seems like we as a pop culture are, now we've seen so much, we're always trying to like up it. I mean, like, I know, like, X-Files' Cops episode, they wanted to literally just have the Cops theme song, no X-Files, like, branding on it whatsoever. And Fox was like, no, you cannot do that. That is way too confusing. Cops is a Fox show. You're a Fox. Like, that's... So they just had, like, X-Files in the Cops font with, like, police sirens or whatever.
Right.
But, like, that's a thing that I feel like if they had a Rod Serling... I think it could have worked if they'd have had Rod Serling come out at the end when all of them are coming in and, like, surrounding him. Because you can't do it at the beginning, because that, like, tips everyone off of, like, yeah, this is
exactly.
not. Yeah. But, like, they could have done it then. But I guess it is interesting. I
wonder... Carl Reiner's Rod Serling would have been, or Mel's Rod Serling would have been a great button. But, yeah, this is us looking at it later.
Yeah.
I think also it's kind of not having that is more of keeping with the fact, like, bookending it at the fact that it was a dream instead of too much making it of we're making it a Twilight episode.
But the middle like 18 minutes is all Twilight Zone.
Episode.
I wonder if it's because Rob was watching a generic scary B movie and not an episode of Twilight Zone, because I think if he was watching a Twilight Zone episode, which would have been impossible in 63 because it probably only aired in primetime when there was no late night syndication of TV shows in this. So it's one of those. So Rob and Laura are going to bed at 8 p.m. tonight. And So yeah, I guess maybe that was the other thing. I could also very readily imagine them having these exact conversations in the writer's room back then, like Carl Reiner. That's very interesting.
And it might also be that, yeah, it's just much more of a generic, what's the Klaatu Barak Nikdu?
Oh, Plan 9 from Outer... Day the Earth Stood Still.
Or Day the Earth Stood Still, yeah. Like, maybe it's just like they're doing all of those movies.
Yeah, and even like the way that the people all get infected is very Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
Which the original is from the 50s, right? 50s, 60s? Yeah. So this is when we get the first no thumbs bit, which takes even more suspension of belief or whatever, because how is anyone picking up literally anything without... Because, like, Rob picks up a lighter and a cigarette, and he does the, like, thing.
Yeah. And the one little bit that I did love is when Danny Thomas leaves... Wait, is that right? Danny Thomas?
Yeah.
Okay. The founder of Wendy's?
It's Dave Thomas.
That's Dave Thomas.
It's his son.
When he leaves, he grabs his little bowler hat with four fingers, and he does this great little, like, he just curls it over the top in the little indentation and then puts it on his head that way.
That's fun. Yeah. See, they're having fun with it. They're all trying. I did note, like, from this point on, everyone is trying to keep that thumb hidden. Which also, like, in a writer's room, that's got to be a weird thing. When the actors read that in the script, like, oh, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Like, this is all makeup, make-believe. You don't have, like, now we have to all figure this out. He then runs home. I like that he comes in, his, like, hat is on stupidly, and he's like, he's totally freaking out.
Okay, so here's another question, Brett, that I have for you as somebody who also hosts a show about menswear.
Oh, yeah.
So does Rob never unbutton his top button? Was that not a thing they did in the 50s or 60s?
Because
he would sit down to type, and he would still be like,
yeah,
have his jacket, have his sport coat buttoned.
Now I need to keep an eye open for this. Maybe because it could have been a weird, like, Dick Van Dyke's choice of, like, aha, in a dream, you don't unbutton your... I have noticed that there are a lot of wild suit coats in the early 60s, and not in the way of, like, in the 70s it's all about pattern, but it's like more traditional cut, but like there are double-breasted coats on suits that they're wearing, but they are these weird, like, it's just four little buttons very low and very close together and not like the traditional. And it's just like, what is that? Or like the lapels are really thin. Like, there's a lot of weird shit.
Yeah.
So this is when we get the most iconic moment. He comes home, he's all frazzled. Does he hear something in the closet? He, like, turns around to go, and, like, he opens up the closet door, the coat closet. I can't remember why he opens it.
He's calling for Laura.
Yeah.
I can't remember why he goes to the closet. I think she says, like, I'm in here or something. Something because it doesn't make sense why he would, assume that she was in the coat closet.
Or it's like, while I'm panicking, I need to make sure I take off my hat. Like, I need to put that away first. And then, but he opens up the door, and then just thousands of walnuts just spill out. They knock him over. And then we get, like, an inset shot kind of from the point of view of the closet to show him, like, in the walnuts, so that when the camera then goes back, we then get Mary Tyler Moore sliding out from who knows what's going on backstage, but, like, sliding out perfectly, landing in a full on, like, pinup pose, like, legs back, hand on, beautiful smile. And it is art. Like, it's just so good. And it's at this point when I wrote, like, how much fun was this fucking job? Like, goddamn, like, you go to work and it's like, yeah, today I am going to be riding out of a closet on thousands of walnuts.
See, I think that's one of the things, like, especially when I was younger, watching the show, that I really liked about it, because there are, like, I feel like they're very prop heavy. Like, there's always, like, these big physical things and props and everything. Cause there's another episode, which I was telling you about, where Rob takes home the wrong baby. He doesn't bring home Richie at first.
Yeah.
But he's like, they're so frazzled about having a kid. They have like all of this kid stuff, and he like is like, there's no reason for him to be juggling all this stuff. But like, that was always one of the fun things, is like, it's always like this zany, like, wah, wah, wah.
They cast, like, when you have like two vaudeville actors like Rosemarie and Maury Amsterdam, and then you have two Broadway people like Dick Van Dyke and Mary Tyler Moore, like two like song and dance people, they just had these four people that are all triple threats. And like, they would just work in an episode of season where the episode is they're all going to just do numbers. We're going to figure out a way to just have them put on a show or like a review. And those episodes are just always just so great because they all have great chemistry together. They can all sing. They're all so funny. And especially like Mary Tyler Moore, who never really did, like Dick Van Dyke did Mary Poppins and like he did a lot of that stuff. It's very rare that you got to hear Mary Tyler Moore sing. And then when she does, she's amazing. And she's such a great dancer. And it is so great. And they really make use of that physical comedy. And I think that's also why, like, I don't know, that had to have been a hard walnut ride. Like, that's like one take, right? Like, you can't do more than one take of that. That's a lot. That's a big setup.
Yeah. For instance, the Mr. Show sketch, the story of Everest, where he Jay Johnston knocks over this little case of thimbles, and the joke is that he's retelling the story of Everest and keeps knocking it over every time. They filmed that in front of a live audience, and they had to reset this little case of thimbles for 30 minutes between every take. So yeah, like with this. Was Dick Van Dyke shot in front of a live audience?
I believe so. It is definitely shot as if it was. Because like when you watch Bewitched and stuff, like it's obvious the camera's going into places that like live show wouldn't go in, but like Dick Van Dyke was definitely. It was definitely on a soundstage because of the like old tale that I've told on the podcast before that it was on the Desilu sound stages, which was owned by Desi and Lucy. And there was one time early on when Mary Tyler Moore, this was like her first acting, like her first TV gig, essentially. She was just a commercial actress on stage. And she was like on a show with all these heavy hitters, and she was so nervous. And she remembered one night when they were doing like run throughs and stuff, she heard laughing coming from the catwalk upstairs, and it was Lucille Ball watching her. And then afterwards, she like came, like Lucille Ball came up to Mary Tomorrow and was just like, "Hey, you're good." And then just like walked away. Like, and Mary Tomorrow was like, "Yeah, that changed everything for me. Like, I then felt like I belonged. I then like," and it's just such a cool, I just love that shit. So yeah, it was definitely a soundstage, at least for at least an audience of one, Lucille Ball.
So this is her lurking up there like the Phantom of the Opera,
smoking a cigarette, mask on.
Desi Lou.
I own this place. So this is when Rob asks, like, so first of all, like, Mary Tyler Moore has gone full Twilight. Rob like basically asks, like, hit me, punch me, wake me up. And she delivers a sock to his face that's really good. She then says, like, she takes a drink of air. She says her name is Lolak. And Mary Tyler Moore as creepy Lolak is great. She's just great.
Yes.
She turns like this really, she just becomes really like sweet but creepy.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
And it's such a good flip of how anxious she was in the first scene. It's like, if this is your only Dick Van Dyke Show episode, you're seeing her at her most anxious and at her most sinister. Just so good. It's so campy as well, and I just love that. Well, this is when, so like, everything goes crazy. The entire cast comes out. They're all four fingers in it. Yeah. And Mary Tyler Moore even does the whole, like, I've got my, she's like, I see you, and like, pulls her
hair. Yes.
The callback of, you've got a stain on your tie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which also, that is kind of a legitimately chilling moment in a way. Like the whole, like, the eyes, because you don't see the eyes in the back of the head.
Yeah.
And so your brain is picturing, what does Mary Tyler Moore's head look like with a pair of eyes underneath that iconic hair?
Yeah.
My brain is filling in.
I know, and even like the way she smiles and everything when she turns around is just so, it's too much.
It's like using that $1 million smile for evil. Is that what she did in Ordinary People? I never saw that movie. That was like her Oscar movie.
Ordinary People, she's very dry. Like, okay. She's like a very emotionless mom where it's like, I don't remember if she actually says to him that she wishes he had died over the brother, but like that's basically like the whole feeling throughout it, where she's just like, she'll just like look at the sun like, oh, you're alive.
Feel good watch. I need to follow that up, follow this up with that. So this is when the alarm goes off and like Rob finally wakes up. Nightmare's over. Now the viewers know it was all a dream. Only right. Now.
Yeah.
In
before
modern...
they assumed, wow, they're destroying the entire universe of the Dick Van Dyke Show for this one episode.
See, this is my main problem with Avengers Endgame, because Avengers Endgame did, like, it's that same level of, like, universe breaking, and then the end of it doesn't put it back together, and so you're then just like, okay. Anyway, that's a separate issue that I have.
I have so many problems with Endgame. But
yeah, blast, a true blast of a movie to watch, etc., etc. But the fundamental destruction of the foundation of the reality of a comic book universe. So, like, obviously, not much reality to begin with. Anyway, my favorite thing
is also the reality of the characters. I think well, this is a total Captain America abandoning everyone just for no. That whole end, I think, is. Goes against his whole military training and who he is as a person.
Also, the whole... Black Widow deserves way better than that. It makes me angry. I don't have a comic book podcast anymore, so I can't get into it. But yeah, what if Dick Van Dyke Show did live in this reality for the rest of the next 3 years? So then they both wake up. Like, Rob screams, he falls out of bed. Laura wakes up too. She had a nightmare herself where Danny Thomas was chasing her, throwing walnuts at her, and where a walnut would hit her, she would lose a thumb and grow an eye.
Yes.
Which...
a strange, great sentence.
Yeah. I almost think, like, Laura's...
he's never addressed.
No.
Like, and also, the other thing was, he just says, oh, I was screaming. Why did you get up? And she's like, oh, because someone was screaming, and he said, oh, that's me. But he never explains, like, his whole
thing. Why was he screaming? Just Rob's night,
like,
terrors
why
again
was he, why was he screaming? She's just like, yeah, she just says her nightmare of this weird additional thing. That
I feel like
you
that
lose
is
a thumb but gain an eye.
It's like, well, after two, what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, are they hitting her square in her hands where her thumbs are, or does she is the Laura Petrie in her dream just a thumb person? Oh god.
Right.
Yeah, this is getting gross. I don't like this. So then we get the coda, the like stinger or whatever, and they're both of them, neither of them can sleep. They're like, they start flipping channels. There's exercise, and like, who would do that at this hour?
Which, this was, I think, one of my favorite joke of the show was was maybe this, of them just watching other shows.
Yeah, because it's then it's like, oh, who's that guy with a beard? And then you hear the TV like, he has 2,000 bumblebees on his face, and they're like, ugh. And then there's a movie, Werewolf from Outer Space, and then they loop back to exercise, and then the sweetest, like, I just love this thing of, like, they both, like, they circle back to the exercise, and they both just get into bed, pull over the covers, and then just start doing leg lifts in bed, watching the exercise, and it's the thing I love about Rob and Laura, is they feel, like, the first episode of I Love Lucy, I think, is titled, Lucy Thinks Ricky is Trying to Murder Her. So, you know, there's that. Whereas on Dick Van Dyke Show, it always does feel like they are together against, like, the world. And so, like, this moment at the end of, like, both of them resigning to, like, hey, man, we're just going to do exercise in bed because what else? Like, it's so nice. Yeah. I love that.
And I did like the good fake out of the road to Singapore.
Oh,
where they're like, this is going to be... can't have nightmares about this
tomorrow night. So are y'all ready for some must-have facts?
Ooh, yes.
Ooh, okay.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, 27.1 million people watched this season of The Dick Van Dyke Show. I don't have episode-specific ratings because that website would not load. I also, who knows how accurate that shit is. For the season, The Dick Van Dyke Show ranked number 9 for the season. I think The Danny Thomas Show is number 7. So, like,
sure.
Big casting. Big stunt casting.
They were really trying to bring themselves up by, yeah.
Yeah, and they did, because next season is the highest rated season of the show. I think they were number 3. The top 5 shows at the time were tied for number 4, The Lucy Show and Bonanza. And then tied for number 2, Candid Camera and The Red Skelton Show. And then number 1, New Kid on the Block, The Beverly Hillbillies.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, which, like, was in color. Was that in color in the
it
first
started,
season?
It was black and white first 2 seasons, I think, which are the only seasons on Hulu. Which bummed me out because I don't know. I would like to have that at my disposal. But, like, what a weird era for the Dick Van Dyke Show to exist within. Like, the Beverly.
But it also kind of bridges those two halves of, like, Red Skelton Show is very much a, like, standard variety show comedian, right? And then, yeah, linking it with the. But it is fundamentally. Dick Van Dyke Show is a sitcom.
But I think it also. It bridges a lot of, like, generations, too. Because it does feel like a 50s traditional, like, family, like, wholesome kind of show. But then it also does have, like, very much new appeal of where they are more silly and sarcastic and playful than just your... Every episode ends on a moral kind of.
God. There are very few morals in Dick Van Dyke Show, which I love. Yeah. And also, the Dick Van Dyke Show really seemed, I don't know if it pioneered it, but, like, it is one of the first, maybe the first, like, work home sitcom. Where, like, there are work stories, like, Bob Newhart Show did this, Mary Tyler Moore Show did this. Like, this became the archetype of what. In my opinion, good sitcoms are, like, from that point on, is...
I feel like Honeymooners would do that right? You would sometimes see Jackie Gleason at the bus depot, right? But I guess they had fewer of... Those weren't the recurring characters,
right? Yeah, right? Like, the cast is comprised of, like, work and home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're both, like, they both have equal weight to the point where, like, when Rosemary agreed to do the show under the impression that she was the co-lead. And then when she got to set for the pilot and saw that, like, oh, wait, no, he's married to that one. Okay, yeah, I'm not the co-lead. Like, this gorgeous, like, song and dance lady is obvious. Like, she was not happy. But they gave her plenty of great stuff to do, and she's great. The CBS Wednesday night lineup that this aired as part of started off with an hour of, like, documentary news program called CBS Reports. And then, so, The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis, followed by The Beverly Hillbillies, followed by The Dick Van Dyke Show, and then alternating weeks, the Armstrong Circle Theater / United States Steel Hour.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. Which was, like, an hour-long drama anthology that would just, like, do new plays every week, and they would just alternate between those two. But again, that's a weird lineup.
Yeah.
Dobie Gillis, Beverly Hillbillies, and Dick Van Dyke? That's weird. Are either of y'all familiar with the many loves of Dobie Gillis?
Not at all.
No.
That was on Nick at Night, like when I was a very young child, and I've never watched it, but I was always like, it had Gilligan in it, it had Bob Denver.
Yeah.
Not John Denver. I always do this. Had Bob Denver on it as essentially the proto Shaggy. Like, he looks just like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. And that's all I remember from it. Do it on the show at some point. I really wish we could find those weird United States Steel Hour things.
I'm sure those don't exist anywhere. There were like three copies and they just went up in a warehouse.
Yeah, or they were immediately like, they just taped over them every week with the new one.
Yes.
Carl Reiner won the Comedy Writing Emmy this season. At that time, they didn't really specify specific episodes, but like, come on. You have this one in there.
Yeah.
So, Curtis, maybe you can illuminate this. This episode aired between the Twilight Zone episodes. So, Mute aired the week before, and Death Ship aired the week after. Mute is about a girl with telepathy who is raised in isolation and then comes back out into the world and has to learn how to, like, be a person? or something.
I don't remember that episode.
Then Death Ship was a group of astronauts land on the planet where they discovered their ship with their dead bodies in it.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. So this aired in between those two. So, like, I don't know. Is this on the level? I mean, this is probably...
No thumbs.
Yeah. What's scarier, seeing yourself in a dead spaceship or not having thumbs?
Getting walnuts thrown at you and
growing eyes.
You lose a thumb and grow an eye.
Laura's dream, I think, is the scarier dream.
Yes.
Also, it's the high budget one, so they were like what's the low budget dream?
No. Someone needs to animate that dream. Like nowadays in 2020. This episode. This episode inspired director Jerry Paris to introduce Mork on Happy Days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's crazy. I did not know that until I was reading that IMDb page. And I was like, surely that's not true. And then I did the research and I was like, he was the main director on Happy Days. And they were like, we want to do a kooky episode. And then boom, Robin Williams. Ugh.
Which is Mork. I haven't seen Happy Days in forever. Is Mork in Happy Days is he real or is he a dream?
Oh, God, I can't remember.
Oh, I can't remember that. Yeah. Because
it feels like such like a, it's the Great Gazoo thing, right? It's like the Flintstones where late, how do we introduce this alien? But in Flintstones, he's real.
I can't remember. I should look that up. I should know. And my internet is going slow, so I couldn't Google it real quick. But I mean, he gets his own show. And so... Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, would DeMork make more than one appearance? Robin Williams, IMDb. And again, I'm not editing any of this out. Oh, I guess I should have gone the Happy Days route.
I think he was in, I'm not sure how many episodes. I do remember he was in a couple because he was friends with Fonzie.
Yeah.
Like, they were friends. So it had to have been like a weird...
Okay, so the first time Mork appears, he wants to bring Richie back to his home world, which that one ends with it being a dream that Richie was having, but it was then retconned to then have actually taken place so that they could bring Mork back, and Mork wiped everybody's memory to make it so it was like a dream.
Oh my!
He Men in Black them.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah, because he came back in 1979 for Mork Returns. Yeah, Happy Days, that show went off the rail. I mean, it jumped the shark, and it coined the term jump the shark. I watched a lot of Mork and Mindy as a kid. I remember nothing about it except the guy that always wore a monk's robe and Jonathan Winters was a baby. That's all I remember, because it's not streaming anywhere. Wild. So a walnut wholesaler provided the walnuts. The cast ate a bunch of them, but they ate too many and all got kind of sick. And then they said the unbroken ones were returned to the wholesaler and then ultimately sold in stores, which is essentially the plot of the movie that Rob is watching, where he's like, Kolak then planted walnuts in stores.
Yeah.
So in 1963, people were eating, it may look like a walnut, walnuts.
Yeah. In... One was that Mary Tyler Moore surfed down her stomach.
So crazy.
I mean, what were the sanitation laws?
They should all be in the Smithsonian, honestly. They should have just, like, known this is going to be a classic episode. Put them in a crate. Just saved them.
It's like the fly version of it, and you could slide down the walnut.
God, where's my Dick Van Dyke Show pop-up store? I went to the Friends experience. Yeah. Give me the Dick Van Dyke Show experience. I want to slide down some walnuts, damn it. So on IMDb, 278 users rated this episode a 9.3 out of 10. Would you say that's higher, lower, right on the money?
I mean, I think that's pretty decent. Yeah. I mean, I think because it is such like a standout episode, I feel like that makes sense that people would rate it higher because it is something that stands out of the regular.
Yeah, you don't forget it.
Yeah, no.
I would say it's too high for that reason. Like, I think that a bunch of the middle part of it relies on the, like, is this a nightmare? What is happening? Mm-hmm. And then we get so many walnut things. There were a bunch of times where it's, oh, I just want to see more of, like, Rob at work and Rob with Laura. Like, right? Like, that part is so fun to me about Dick Van Dyke Show.
Yeah.
And the middle part would have it, and then they would drop it all for the Twilight Zone. I think enjoyed this episode less than I did most normal Dick Van Dyke episodes.
No, yeah, like the thrill and fun of this is seeing them pulling off the conceit, like the concept. It's more of a like a you marvel at it as like honestly like talking about it and realizing all the structure stuff. Like, I realize he had to torment Laura at the beginning because his whole thing in Act 2 is Laura convinced everyone to do all this stuff. And if he's doing it to Richie, Richie can't convince anyone. So, I mean, so like, it is like, it's really cool. And like, even the whole thing about like, well, he wasn't watching a Twilight Zone episode and that's why there wasn't a Rod Serling. Like, there's a lot of things where like, oh, you really respect like the craft and structure of it, even if like... Yeah, like there are definitely better episodes of Dick Van Dyke Show. Ghost of a Chance is great. And the one that I did with Kirk D'Amato, I think it was episode 2 of this podcast, where they write in a whole bunch of slurs against Alan Brady into a script, and then they accidentally forget to erase them before sending it into him. And they spend the entire episode just trying to get into his office to steal it back. And it's Always Sunny. Like, it's so good. So, like, those are great because they're, like, these ensemble pieces, and this is really cool from a structural, like, I can't believe they did that in season 2 kind of way. So, for that reason,
so against, I think the show overall is, like, such a on-point show that I think this being so against the normal of it is, and they do it quite well. I think, even just thinking about it, like, I'm not an exposition person. Like, I'd rather just like
just let me jump in.
So, but the way that it's very natural, like how they set up like all of the rules and everything at the beginning, and they are gently hinting at things of like they need to mention, like, they need to see how tortured she is by this. They need to mention the fact that like she set this alarm, because that's another thing where he's like, okay, alarm. Like, you need to like have all of these things set into place to like then be the thing that that's how he's really losing it.
And to also do some, like, I feel like a lesser show would be like, no thumbs, that's all we need. But they like set up no thumbs, no imagination, eyes in the back of their head. They drink air. Like, they set up a ridiculous amount of stuff, and then they play with all of it multiple times. I love that. Who had the must-see performance of the episode?
Mary Tyler Moore? What do you think?
I mean, well, putting Danny Thomas and his beautiful accent aside,
I mean, you can go for it. You can give us a Danny Thomas needs more love.
I think Mary Tyler Moore. Because the craziness of of Dick Van Dyke, of Rob, is like not that far off from the normal.
And also, there was a part where I realized, oh, he is not as good of an actor as Mary Tyler Moore is.
Oh.
Where it's like, he's like, you can see like, oh, you're pretending to be scared.
Yeah.
Whereas you mentioned earlier, Mary Tyler Moore, she definitely has that switch of she's Laura and then she's Trilo Laura.
Yeah.
And those definitely feel very different and funny in very different ways.
Yeah. And she's, and just like the dryness of it and like the sea, like she doesn't, it's not a like wink, wink, like I'm serious now.
No,
like,
yeah.
She's just kind of like, what? I don't, why would I? Yeah,
she's a fully new character.
Him, yeah,
it's so
even
cool.
When she answers him, she's like, I would never do something silly like that.
Yeah.
Like, I would never joke like that. Like, she says it in such a way that you're like, wait, is she? Like, you're kind of a little.
She's a legend. Must see.
Yeah.
Must other people see this episode of television?
Yeah.
Especially now. So. What else we got to do?
I would say watch 5 to 10 other episodes of Dick Van Dyke. And then if you like those, get to this.
Yeah.
Just because it is such a, I think the fun of it is the subversion of what we know about the characters.
Yeah. Yep. You have to know the characters a bit. I mean, but with that being said too, I'm thinking of it, like, I think you can get, especially from, because they established the beginning so well. I mean, like the smaller jokes of like with
The Melon Buddy
and Mel and like all like that stuff, maybe not, but I think the way that the characters are so clearly established at the beginning that if you just like had turned on the TV and you were like, oh, what's this show?
I think also if you're interested in Twilight Zone, you could come into this and just be like, how did a 1960s sitcom that was airing concurrently look at... It's interesting to think, like, what tropes did Carl Reiner perceive watching Twilight Zone week to week that he then, in real time, got to then riff with? That's very interesting. Because
there is a lot of Day the Earth Stood Still, right? There's the whole UN scene is directly from that. Like, it is very much... like you were saying earlier, I think it is maybe a broader science fiction spoof than just Twilight Zone, even though the structure feels a lot
very,
like
that.
Yeah, because it does hit on a lot of, which they do a lot in sci-fi and in Twilight Zone, it's very sort of government-based. Like his backstory is very government-based of where he's doing this and... So it's like this whole other like super conspiracy of that going on. And so it's not just like, for example, in Happy Days when Morph just shows up and he's like, hey! And,
like, God, that's so crazy. Ugh.
Yeah.
I need to do Mork's second appearance on this podcast, I think. Just like, how do they justify... Cool. We learned that aliens exist and there might be no God. Like aliens arriving on Earth fundamentally cracks open the structure of all of our organized religion. And the fact that Happy Days was just like, hey, man, still going to go to go to Al's after this or whatever. Like, so crazy.
I also feel like, and this is probably wrong, but I feel like also he showed up in like Joni Loves Chachi.
Probably.
Like, it was like this weird, like, he would just like just appear randomly.
The Mark and Mindy Laverne and Shirley Fonz hour? What was that? Was that an animated?
He did
Mork's voice. It was an animated show, a 1982 cartoon series featuring animated versions of characters from Mork and Mindy, Laverne and Shirley, and Happy Days, all part of the same franchise.
1982 is way too late to do a Happy Days extension. Yeah. That's around the same time the Star Trek animated show was.
Was Happy
which
Days?
Maybe there was just like cheap ass animation that they were like, oh, we can bring these shows back.
God, that's wild. Thank you all so much for taking a trip to the planet Twyla with me. Where can people find you on the internet and talk about walnuts?
You can find me on Instagram at C, like in the ocean, S-E-A, Halyard, H-A-L-Y-A-R-D. And
I am actually Curtis on Instagram and Twitter, or CurtisRutherford.com, CurtisRetherford.com. And if you're an improviser, my improv podcast, Improv Beat by Beat, you can find on iTunes.
Hell yeah.
I also have my my DigiReader company. If anyone needs a scene partner while you are in seclusion, you can find me at the DigiReader on Instagram.
Hell yeah! And that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guests Curtis Rutherford and Courtney Rose Halliard for dropping by and talking about the Dick Van Dyke Show episode with me. Next time, I'll be discussing the Designing Women episode, The Junies. The Junies is in season 3, episode 12, and you can stream The Junies on Hulu. Until then, I want to hear from all of you. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram, and let's talk about sitcoms in this awful, awful time. And if you want to watch live streams of classic sitcoms, peep the Instagram, because I'm testing out just putting my phone in front of my television, hitting play, and then hoping that Instagram's, I don't know, content police don't just shut me down. They haven't yet. So follow the Instagram account. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts. Follow me in, on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. Read the words that I write at Decider.com. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to all y'all for listening, and I will see you next time on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.